These are all of our stories. These are who we are as Americans.
Freedom leads to prosperity. Freedom is the victor.
This is the podcast of Grassroots Radio Colorado with your host, Chris Cook.
And welcome. I am Chris Cook. You are listening to the Grassroots Radio Colorado podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. I had a really interesting weekend. I really did. The Colorado GOP State Central Committee meeting was on Saturday in Pueblo, and of course I attended. I am a bonus member, a member of that body, a voting member, and it's my job to do that because my fellow House District members entrusted me with that, and so I went to Pueblo and got to see a whole bunch of great friends. And you know, I mean, it's always kind of fun to get together with other activists and people who are politically activated. And it's always fun to engage in battle. You know, I mean, this was sort of the culmination of all of the caucus stuff that I have been talking about over the course of the past couple months, and protecting our delegation to the National Convention and fighting back against what the Republican National Committee is trying to do in terms of the local or the state delegations and how they really, really want to make that convention into a coronation. I mean, that's really what they want to do, or at least that's what they wanted to do in 2012 before Donald Trump suddenly became a phenomenon. So I'm not sure that they still want that, but I guess we'll see what happens with all that. But anyway, so you know, at a local level, at a state level, it was the culmination of a lot of efforts that I and a bunch of other people have been undertaking in order to make sure that our delegation was protected. It's politics, practical politics, that it's right in the trenches. I mean, this is really what it is. And I'm happy to report that we did win on the caucus issue, which is awesome. There was no challenge to the March date, and so our delegation will not be penalized in terms of taking away delegates, because you know, there was some consideration at one point in time for a February date. The motion to move the caucus to February was soundly defeated, and it was kind of awesome to watch. And nobody brought up any sort of a resolution. I really had expected one, actually, but nobody brought up a resolution to run a straw poll at the state assembly or the state convention. And so from that perspective, I mean, that was a surprise that didn't happen. I'm still expecting that there may be some sort of a play made, but I don't know what it could possibly be and be implemented against the will of the Central Committee members. That would be a travesty. I mean, you'd have revolution on your hands at this point. You really would. We've spoken. We've said that we do not want a straw poll. I am going to believe that is the sentiment that is going to carry us through July of 2016. That's awesome. We protected the grassroots voice that is the state of Colorado. We're independent people. We don't want to be controlled by Washington, D.C. We're all the way out here in the West. Why in the heck do they think that they can control us? And so that's why we fought back and we protected the voice. We protected the voice of the people. It was really kind of cool to watch. It really was. And the even better news, now there was, in addition to those two pieces of business, one which didn't even occur, and the moving of the February date, there were a couple other things that were on the agenda for Saturday's meeting. The one was whether, you know, what formula we're going to use to allocate delegates to the state convention, and which seems to be sort of a non-starter of an issue. It's like, okay, why is this even important? But it becomes important when you look outside of the Denver metro area and you start looking at these smaller counties and you start looking at some places that, okay, how is Liberty going to get a voice, enough of a voice at the state convention? And the ideal sorry, the ideal is for us to have the maximum number of convention delegates that the venue can actually even hold, so that the establishment people who are going to get in no matter what, at least we have an opportunity to get Liberty people also in there, also into the World Arena in Colorado Springs in April. And that is what's going to happen. That's the plan that we chose was one delegate for every 250 votes cast for gubernatorial candidate, Beaupre. And that gave us the maximum number. It's almost 4,000 delegates plus 4,000 alternates to go to the state convention in April. That is the best possible outcome for Liberty. It is the best possible outcome for the Liberty camp. And I'm really, really excited to see that. The other thing that was on the agenda were a bunch of amendments to the bylaws. And stick with me because I'm not going to get weedy on these. But they basically came in three flavors. There was two of them had to do with the delegations for future presidential conventions. And we protected our future presidential conventions from being bound by a straw poll as well. It was a reactive measure to what the RNC rule changes were, but we have protected our future delegations from being bound by a straw poll and being bound by a vote. And so they will be free agents in the future as well, which is really exciting to me. That part, that amendment, and there was one other that had to do with the same sort of issue having to deal with our delegation, both passed almost unanimously. And that was so cool to watch. I was so prepared for a fight on that, and it didn't happen. And so that was one flavor. It had to do with the caucus. The second flavor had to do with, or there was one amendment that was trying to mandate that the counties give up all of their contact information for everybody who's volunteered basically to occupy a position within the county and give that to the state organization. Not that I think that's a bad thing. I think that information should be freely shared up and down the chain, I believe. I don't believe it belonged in the bylaws, because then you put county chairs who have people who are refusing to give them contact information for whatever reason. You're putting the county chairs in violation of the state bylaws against their will. They didn't make any sort of a movement to make that happen. They would become responsible for somebody else's actions. Don't think that belongs in the bylaws. I just really, that kind of goes against my grain. And so that's why I voted against that one. Didn't like it. The third flavor is the one that I want to talk about a little bit tonight. And I want to contrast it with what happened with the caucus stuff. So the third flavor of amendments that were coming through, basically, I had one member of the bylaws committee characterize it as, don't lean on Larry Crowder. Larry Crowder is a legislator from Northwest Colorado, and he's always carrying a bunch of proxies. And always, you know, there's a lot of power concentrated in Larry Crowder. So, and there's a lot of power that's concentrated with the chairman and not distributed out. And you know, we're Republicans. We believe in a republic, a representative republic. We believe in distributed power. And so these amendments were really going towards that end. And almost to a fault, I think they all failed. There may have been one that passed, and I don't remember which one it was. But all of these that were trying to decentralize this power, decentralize proxy abuse, decentralize these concentrations of power that were allowed or that are allowed at this point within the bylaws, they were trying to diffuse some of that. Now understand that the bylaws committee who wrote these bylaws, very good Liberty people, good friends of mine, really good Liberty people, and I absolutely adore each and every one of them. But nevertheless, we did not see success with those bylaws changes. So I want to talk about why. And that's I didn't really want to get into the changes themselves, but I wanted to kind of talk about why. With the caucus, we established a couple months ago, 2-3 months ago, we identified that this was going to be a problem, that it was going to be a fight to get this and make sure that our delegation was protected, that Colorado's voice at the convention was protected. And so we started a narrative on this. And it was a core group of people who really started to push it. You heard some of it here on the podcast. You heard, you know, some of these rumblings. Maybe you saw it on social media. If you follow Facebook, if you follow, you know, some of the groups on Facebook where this stuff was being discussed. And we started that narrative of we have to protect Colorado's voice. We established that story and hung all of this stuff onto that story. And I think because of that, in large part, and I'm not taking credit. I mean, people were given the evidence and they made up their own minds. But I think in part because we were able to present it as part of this narrative, as part of this bigger structure, that it took hold. And it made it easier for people to grasp. It made it easier for folks to understand exactly what was going on, what the implications were of both ways on this vote, and therefore make up their mind because they had something to hang it on. They had the story behind it. And I mean story in its purest sense, you know, storytelling type story, that we had the structure, the skeleton to hang this on. The bylaws that didn't make it through. First of all, we're drafted in a short time frame, and so the opportunity to build that narrative was a very, very, very small window, and may or may not have taken hold. But regardless, there wasn't a narrative that was constructed around those bylaws. I mean, the narrative really is, let's decentralize this power. Let's take some of this power that the chairman has, and let's give it to the executive committee. Let's give it to the CRC. Let's distribute it out so that people have an opportunity, a more participatory opportunity, to be a part of this process and to affect change and to be empowered. And it sort of taps into that same populist sentiment that Donald Trump is tapping into, that Carly Fiorina is tapping into. You know, these folks, they're hanging a lot of their campaigns on this really populist sentiment in terms of, let's empower you. Let's make sure that your voice is heard. Let's make sure that your concerns are addressed. Let's make sure that you, we the people, you, are at the top of this food chain, not at the bottom. And that's a lot. That's what was behind those bylaws amendments. You see it in the presidential campaigns. You see it all over the place. That kind of tapping into that larger narrative. This is something that we as Republicans are really, really bad at. We've not had a lot of success taking our principles and tying them into that larger narrative and helping people to understand how it empowers them, how it gives them dignity, how it keeps the family at the top, how it keeps everything, I don't want to say in order, but it gives order and meaning to our society. Those are our conservative principles. And it's that larger narrative that we have a ton of trouble. And I mean, just an inordinate amount of trouble tapping into. We don't have the skill set or the imagination to try to make this happen. Now, when I was on air, you got to hear once a week, I had Corey and Andy Pate from the Party of Choice on my show. And we would talk about messaging. We would talk about how to get people to hear what you're saying. And if you go back and you listen to some of those podcasts, you start to realize that it's all tying into a larger narrative. The larger narrative is, we're all on the same side. We all want these same things. Here's how what we're talking about ties in to what it is that you want. I mean, that's the second step of the story, but the overall narrative is, we all want these same things. We all want to be free. We all want to control our own lives. We all want that. Here's how your side is screwing that up, and here's how our side is doing it right. only a lot more diplomatic than that. I am a Republican. I didn't say I was good at this. I'm just identifying sort of the meta, meta structure that's going on here, so that maybe we can address it once we have some idea. So when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the history of how we are losing that narrative, and give you a couple ideas how we can take it back. I'll be right back. And that song is called I Got a Plan to Rule the World. Freemusicarchive.org chose that song because I do have a plan to rule the world. Of course I do. That's why you listen, because I've got minions. I don't know. We have got to take this narrative thing back. We've got to get good at this. And the reason why, the big reason why, is because we are losing a much bigger war than politics. We are losing a much bigger war. We're losing the cultural war for our country. And I'm not just talking about social conservative issues. I'm talking about the idea of America, the idea of our exceptionalism, the idea of who we are as a nation is being lost to the cultural wars. And it's because we failed to counter the narrative. We failed to counter what the progressive left has done, and they are masters. Absolute masters of controlling the narrative. They are absolute masters of making sure that public opinion goes in their way, because they control education, they control entertainment, and they do control the government. So here is our problem. We have got to get good at this, or else we are never going to be able to recover our country. Andrew Breitbart used to say that culture is upstream of politics. And he's absolutely right. He is absolutely right. That is where the real battleground lies, is in our culture and in making sure that that narrative makes sense. On my way down to Pueblo on Friday, I was looking at the cars. We were stuck in traffic, and there was this car that I was back and forth with on the highway, because it was just stop and go, stop and go. And this car had a bumper sticker on it and said, Republicans are cool. And I thought that was awesome first. And then I thought, but are we? I mean, are we really cool? Do we have that in us? Do we have some way of proving that? Yeah, I think we're cool. I think that the things that we want to do and the things that we want to enforce as far as the Constitution goes, and enforcing limited government and enforcing individual rights, I think we're cool. But getting the rest of the world to see that is a bit bigger task. Of course, I think that. I'm a conservative talk radio host. But I think getting the bigger world to see that, to get the people who watch the Colbert Report and who watch Bill Maher to understand that actually Republicans are cool, and that the liberals are the ones who want to control your life and take all your stuff and give it to other people. They're the ones who are not cool. But they're so good at capturing the cool narrative. They're so good at capturing that. How did all this start? I mean, all of this started, and we didn't recognize it when it started. We failed to see what was going on, or we dismissed it. And it all really started to happen in the 60s. If you think about it, I mean, the roots of it go back further than that. But the countercultural revolution in the 60s was when this narrative really gained full steam. And that's when it started with a bang, and we still didn't counter it. We still didn't do anything with it. The 60s reestablished our country's own narrative. That's what they did. They tied in the mythology of the founding fathers, the mythos, really, the ethos of our founding fathers as these rebels who were striking back against authority. They took that mythos and they turned it from a principled stand into a hedonism laced with this nihilism and this existentialism that came out of the Beat Generation, they completely changed the narrative. They completely changed what it was that we stood on, our foundation, the foundation of our country. They took what our founding fathers had started, this rebel, this independence, this idea that we are different, that we are principled, that we are going to stand on these and live or die for these principles. And they made that rebel philosophy into this hedonism, this free-for-all. And they took it, and we never countered it. Our counter was, well, y'all should come back to church, you hippies. You know, I mean, we just basically dismissed them. You know, it's a phase, they'll grow out of it. You know, whatever, we completely dismissed it. The left, the Marxists grabbed onto that. They grabbed onto that sentiment and that zeitgeist and they ran with it. They ran with it because it played perfectly into what Marx wanted to do. It played perfectly into Marxism and communism and how they needed to destroy society in order for their philosophy to come to ascendancy. And that is what has happened in the intervening 50 years. They have destroyed the family. We have destroyed the family. We have made it acceptable to destroy the family. In fact, we've nationalized the family. We have nationalized the family. Think about this. I got this from Mark Stein. I thought this was a brilliant quote. It's actually from a guy named, I'm going to totally murder this, Professor Vaidyanathan, who is a professor in Bangalore, India, okay? Not a right-wing guy by any stretch of the imagination, but he got this one absolutely right. The West has nationalized families over the last 60 years. Old age, ill health, single motherhood, everything is the responsibility of the state. Think about that. We've nationalized families and made it the responsibility of the state. Okay? That destruction of the basic building block of society is at the root of so many of our problems. It's at the root of the drug culture. It's at the root of just so many problems. And parents abdicating their power over their children, their responsibility towards their children, abdicating all of that to the state through the public school system, abdicating their responsibility for health care through Obamacare, abdicating all of it. We've abdicated all of our power and all of our responsibilities over our own lives to the state. You wonder why liberty is dying. That's a huge part of it. And so now, not content that they have utterly obliterated the family, now they're moving on to obliterating the basic biological building block of society, gender. Men, women, doesn't matter. All the same thing. We're not. Guys, we're not. Men and women are not the same. We are different. And we're different for a reason, and it's a good reason. And it's a happy reason, and it's not just kids. We bring different thoughts and different socializations and different energies to all of our interactions because of that basic biological building block. Men, women, it's binary. Really, it is. There are not 50 different choices for gender, no matter what Facebook tells you, okay? When you sign up for a Facebook account, there are 50, I haven't actually checked this out. I'm going to have to go check this out. I'm hearing that there are 50 different choices for what your gender is. 50. It's binary. Man, woman, male, female. Two X chromosomes, X and a Y. There's no other combinations. There are no other combinations. But they're not content with leaving the biological truth alone. They're making up their own truth as they go along, and we're failing to counter it. The only way that we try to counter it, we do it with such a judgmental tone, without the narrative, that it creates more problems than it solves. We do it so poorly that we're not reaching anybody. We're establishing ourselves as ultimately uncool, and we're failing to put thought into the narrative that we need to be using in order to counter these cultural wars. This is the battleground. You do not go into battle without a plan. We do it all the time. We need to stop doing that. Our culture, basically, it's become foundationless. We've obliterated the family. We're obliterating gender. It's foundationless. There's nothing true and solid about anything in our culture anymore. All of it is ephemeral. All of it is moving. And again, that plays right into the Marxist idea that we, the only thing that's real is economics and the state controlling the economics. Those are the only things that are real in Marxism. Everything else, art, culture, history, all of that is ephemeral. It doesn't matter what it says. It's just a sentiment of the population. It doesn't matter what it says. It's foundational to the population. It's foundational to the principles that we espouse. And so we have got to take back this role. We have to take back the culture. And to do that, we have to take back the narrative. We have to counter with a narrative that reestablishes the role of the family. And make sure that nobody believes that the government is a good substitute for the family. It just cannot replace. I've heard slogans that try to say, you know, your government doesn't love you, you know, things like that. But the evidence is to the contrary, because we have come to associate love with monetary support. Government hands out monetary support all the time. And so therefore your government does love you. Think of Julia. You remember Julia from the 2012 re-election campaign from Obama? I still shudder when I think about that. But, you know, the little cartoon character woman who goes through her entire life cradle to grave with Obama as her boyfriend, basically, handing out everything. She's his kept woman. And that's what so many people have become. They've become the government's mistress. How about we stop that? How we stop making that cool and we start making that abhorrent? That would be the narrative that we need to establish, but we're not doing it. But we can. I mean, think, for example, about the school board races. We've got a couple really contentious races, especially over in Jeffco, going on right now. And the Jeffco narrative, and they're trying to recall the conservative members of the school board. The reason is because the union wants to make sure that they are in control of what your children are learning. This really, the Jeffco school board race is really a David versus Goliath story. It's David, these three conservative members of the Jeffco school board, these Davids standing up for your right to determine how your children are educated, for your right to have a voice in their education, to keep it local, to keep it part of the community where school board or school decisions should be made, not in Washington, D.C. So they're the Davids. The union is the Goliath. The union and all of the union money that is backing the recall effort, all of this money that's coming in from out of state, all of this money that's flowing here from Washington, D.C., so that Washington, D.C. can buy your children. These Davids are standing up to that Goliath. That's the narrative. That's the narrative right there. Standing up against these people who want to steal your children. That's the narrative. Why do we have so much trouble putting this together? But if we start pushing things like that and making sure that it is actually illustrated in that way, and think back to what I was talking about at the beginning of the podcast, the caucuses. You know, it's RNC and Reince Priebus in Washington, D.C. trying to steal your voice, trying to steal our voice as the grassroots movement. We pushed back against that and we won. We won. People overwhelmingly want their voice to be heard, overwhelmingly want to be part of that process and be empowered to be a voice, an important voice in that process. We won because of that sentiment, and we won because what we were doing was actually serving what they wanted. So that's how you use narrative. We can do this. This is like one of those really cool, infinitely scalable things. We can do this in Hollywood. We can do this in news media. We can do this in education. We can do this anywhere where we've got a political battle. This is the narrative. So we fight these culture wars. We fight these culture wars. There's two main things I think that we need to do in order to fight this war and to win. The first thing is that we need to remove the foundation that they've established. Now, their foundation, the way that they've established their narrative, their foundation is the government. The government underlies everything. The government is responsible for everything. It's responsible for the family. It's responsible for telling you what your gender is. It's responsible for telling you what your rights are. It's responsible for everything. We need to remove that. Our Republican candidates for president, all the way down to dog catcher, need to remove the state as the foundation for our society. And that also means, to you, those of you who are social conservatives, that also means we need to remove the government as the foundation for our morals. The government does not give us our morals. And it never, ever should. Once we start handing over our morals to our government, then we lose them. Understand that. So we have to remove government, the state, as the foundation of our society. Government is there for one purpose and one purpose only, to serve our individual rights, to protect our individual rights. That is why the government exists. That's the only legitimate purpose of it. And so that is fighting for that goal, for that reason, surrounding it with that narrative that we do not want to hand over our families and our children and our gender and our morals. We don't want to hand those things over to the government. We do not want to hand it that kind of power. Those things are in our power. Those things are our responsibility. Those things are our privilege to have. And those are the things that we need to be protecting from government encroachment. The second thing that we need to do is we need to fight back against political correctness. What they've done in setting up the government as the foundation for everything that liberals want, everything the progressive left wants, they've also established this PC agenda so that it's self-regulating. Your neighbors will tell you if you are not towing the line that the government is God. Your people on Facebook will tell you if you are being on PC and you are out of line and you should just sit down and shut up. They will tell you what you have to be saying. That's what political correctness is. It actually works on both sides of the aisle. On the right-hand side of the aisle, we call it the 11th commandment. But it's still political correctness. You can put any name you want to on it, but it's still political correctness. We need to fight back against that. We need to bring back critical thinking. We need to bring back plain speech. We need to bring back the idea that you say what you mean and you do what you say. We need to bring that back as cool and fight back against this PC bull, because that is what keeps it all in power. That's the glue that keeps it all standing. But it's not strong glue. Enough people fight back against politically correct speech, then we have an opportunity to actually change the narrative. But until then, we're buying into their premises. So be un-PC. Go ahead and say the things that people don't really want to hear. Like, racism is flowing from blacks to whites nowadays, not the other way around. That's an un-PC statement. But it's the truth. Affirmative action is nothing but racism in another form. One of my favorites, and the thing that really gets a lot of hate mail for me, is that the public accommodations section of the Civil Rights Act shouldn't be in there. It's none of government's damn business how private businesses conduct themselves. Now, in this age of technology with Yelp and online reviews and the ability to organize boycotts at basically a moment's notice, that's how those problems get solved. That's how that happens. Not through the government coming in and telling us what we can and cannot do. We don't get to hand that over. We don't get to hand over those decisions about how our conscience should be functioning to the government. We have those decisions in our purview. We need to take them back. It's not PC, but it is the truth. That's what we have to do. We have to start taking back this narrative. We have to start being conscious of the narratives that we are constructing and making sure that that what we're doing is we are effectively fighting these cultural battles. This is the battleground. Culture is the battleground. Once you have public sentiment on your side, the elections come easy. Culture is the battleground. And we have to keep pushing on that front, probably more than any other. Thanks so much for listening to me tonight. I really enjoyed this podcast. Find me on Facebook, facebook.com/grassrootsradiocolorado. You can also always email me if you want to send me some hate mail. That'd be awesome. Chris, K-R-I-S, at grassrootsradiocolorado.com. Love to hear from you. And as always, remember, America is great because Americans are great. So go out there and be exceptional.